Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey friends, it's me again. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. If you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in and give me a thumb. Say hi while you're at it. Helps me a ton with that damn algorithm. And besides, it's always nice to see you there. All right then, let's hop on that crazy train.
All aboard!
Shit. Welcome back, friend. I see you. Think you can sneak up on old Drew, huh? Well, it's officially spring today here in the Northern Hemisphere. And if that weren't enough, today we celebrate Bibliomania, a special holiday for book lovers everywhere. Yeah, that's right, Chester. It's kinda like Hulkamania. But instead of saying your prayers, eating your vitamins, and banging your daughter's friends, you curl up at home with a good book. Not quite as exciting, but wholesome. Anyway, come on in, friend. Hey, check out simplyscarypodcast.com and become a patron. For $7.99 a month, you can get the entire catalog ad-free and available to download and stream. It's a good way to show your support, and you get a whole lot for it. Also, check out patreon.com/drewblood, too, if you get a chance. If you'd like to support me directly, that's a good way to do it. All right, so tonight, friends, we welcome back our good friend and fan favorite, Brian Asbury. Oh, hell yeah! Now, in this latest story of his, we meet a prisoner with a dark past who's about to get a second chance. So, without further delay, from author Brian Asbury, I give you Judgment Night. The Decision. Fluorescent lights reflected off Dennis Prater's glasses as he sat motionless and dressed in his neatly pressed prison greens. This wasn't the first time he had faced the parole board, and he didn't expect much to come from his hearing.
Mr. Prater, please refresh us again on how you've taken accountability for the two murders that you committed, and what steps you've taken to change your life.
Dennis paused thoughtfully. He appeared calm and collected as usual. But then again, there wasn't much that would rattle a contract killer. The crime that had landed him behind bars some 26 years earlier.
Well, ma'am, to be honest with you, I was a real bastard when I first fell. I was someone that I'd never want to be associated with today. And I feel horrible for what I did. But to answer your question, I guess part of holding yourself accountable is taking a hard look at yourself and becoming self-aware. That's a tool that I learned in the Healthy Habits class that I've chaired for the last 6 years. I am also proud to say that I've been write-up free since 2010. It's like I always say, actions speak louder than words. I feel like if I can follow the rules in here, it'll be that much easier for me to follow the rules on the outside if I were given the opportunity again.
Dennis then reached down and picked up several wooden knickknacks that he had crafted at his job in the wood shop. He placed them on the table one by one. There was a jewelry box, a hand-painted model ship, a butterfly sculpture, and a miniature log cabin.
These are a few pieces that I made at my job in the wood shop. The ship belongs to C.O. Grigo. It's a gift for his father who was in the Navy. I make a lot of stuff for staff. I like to keep busy. And I believe that by making things like this, I can still be productive and give back to society in some way. One of the board members grinned with amusement.
Is that a Zumwalt destroyer?
Yeah, it sure is, Dennis said pridefully as he turned and looked down at the tiny ship.
I was actually stationed on one when I served in the Navy. I could tell by the insignia. Very nice.
Thank you, and thank you for your service. Yeah, that one was a bit of a challenge for me. Then again, my eyesight's getting worse all the time.
Dennis grabbed a manila envelope that was sitting on the chair next to him. He pulled out several certificates and arranged them neatly on the table.
These are some certificates from the classes that I completed this last year. I've taken just about every one that I can get into.
And what classes are those?
Decision points and parents on a mission, he grinned. I'm still a parent, even if my kids are probably double some of your ages.
The Poseidon officer scribbled some notes, then looked up from his paperwork.
Thank you, Mr. Prater, and I do appreciate that you're using your time in here productively. At this time, we're going to pause for a brief deliberation, and then we'll reconvene and deliver a decision.
Dennis was then escorted out into the hallway where he took a seat and quietly awaited the board's decision. A short time later, a CO stepped out and escorted him back into the room. After he was seated, the Poseidon officer spoke up.
Thank you for your patience, Mr. Prater. You've been incarcerated for 26 years now. As you know, your sentence is life with the possibility of parole. It's a sentence that's deserving, considering the reprehensible crime that you committed. You've been denied parole 7 times. Now, despite that, you've continued to comply with the rules of the prison. You have programmed in an acceptable manner. At this point, as with all parole hearings, our job is to determine if you've served enough time and if you still pose any kind of threat to society. Taking your record into account, as well as your advanced age and numerous recommendations from staff, we consider you to be at a low risk to reoffend. You've also finally managed to secure housing. Based off all of these factors, our vote is to grant your parole. Good luck to you, Mr. Prater. That will conclude this hearing.
Dennis heard the words, but still hadn't processed their meaning. A bewildered smile soon formed on his face.
Thank you. Thank you,
were the only words he could utter. He got to his feet and began collecting his belongings. As he walked towards the door, he exchanged glances with the parole board members.
Thank you for having mercy on this old man.
He made his way through the yard when he approached Tommy White, an older black convict who was working in the flower garden. Tommy paused and turned to him as he shielded his eyes from the afternoon sun.
How'd it go?
I got it,
Dennis replied, still in shock.
You got parole?
Yeah.
Tommy dropped the bucket of weeds that he was holding and smiled with astonishment. He walked over to Dennis and reached to shake his hand.
Did I just hear that right? Holy shit, Dennis. That's great news.
I can still hardly believe it. I'm kinda in shock.
Why change their minds this time?
I really couldn't tell you. I knew there was always a chance, but you know as well as I do. They don't call this place the concrete coffin for nothing. After I drop this stuff off in my room, I'm gonna go talk to my case manager.
Dennis was one of Tommy's few friends, so the news came as bittersweet to him.
That gives me hope, man. Hope that maybe one day, that'll be me.
Dennis put his hand on Tommy's shoulder and looked him in the eye.
It will. Listen, just don't go saying anything, all right? If anyone asks, I'm gonna tell them I was denied. You know how word spreads in here. No one needs to know shit.
Tommy nodded.
Yeah, I won't say a word.
A little while later, Dennis waited in line to speak to his case manager.
An inmate soon exited her office. Then she looked up from her computer and waved him inside.
"Hey, I just heard the good news. Congratulations,"
she said with a beaming smile as he stepped through the doorway. Dennis laughed.
"Well, that makes two of us,"
he said as he shook her hand and took a seat.
"I'm glad you stopped in, because we need to get moving on finalizing your parole plan."
"That's what I wanted to ask you about. It's been a while, but the last time we spoke, it seemed like my housing situation was the one thing that was tripping me up. Where am I paroling to?"
"Well, let me pull up your file and see what I can find out."
His case manager typed at her computer and skimmed over the information. She squinted her eyes.
"Okay, well, it's given me an address here. 538 Pine Way, Manitou Springs. Let me Google it and see what comes up."
She typed in the address and a small white house situated within the woods pulled up.
"Oh, that's cute,"
she remarked.
"Do you care if I look?" Dennis asked.
"Sure."
She turned her screen towards him, and he gazed at it with a puzzled look on his face.
"Whose house is that?"
His case manager shifted her eyes to her other monitor.
"Let me go to your notes and see what it says."
She clicked a few boxes and began reading the narrative.
"Okay, so it says, Mr. Prater was successfully paroled to Manitou Springs after securing housing. His mother, Nancy Prater, deceased, included him as the home successor. He will take possession of the dwelling once the appropriate documentation has been completed." "Well, according to this, it looks like your mother willed you her house."
The baffled look on Dennis's face grew in intensity.
"I didn't even know she passed away, but the last I knew, she lived in Fountain."
"I remember you telling me that you lost touch with your family shortly after you fell."
"Yeah, besides a few random letters here and there, it's been..."
Dennis thought about it.
"Close to 20 years or more since I've spoken to any of them."
"Well, this just shows you that your mom was obviously thinking of you. Maybe it's time to try and reconnect. Having support from your family's huge, especially when you've been incarcerated for as long as you have."
That evening, as Dennis passed through the chow line, one of the kitchen workers called out to him.
"What's up, OG? What they say at your hearing?"
Dennis just shook his head somberly.
"Don't let it get you down. Here."
The man looked around, then shoveled an extra serving of beef stew onto Dennis's tray. Dennis nodded and raised his fist to him as he continued through the line. He took a seat in the corner next to Tommy. That was the table that was reserved for the lifers.
"Did you talk to your case manager?"
Tommy asked, making sure to keep his voice low.
"Yeah. Apparently I inherited my mother's house. That had to be what lit the fire under the board's ass." "Oh man, that's amazing. Well, the good news just keeps coming today, don't it? Yeah, maybe some of that good luck will rub off on me." "Well, I don't know where that good luck's been for the last 26 years, but if I could give you some, believe me, I would."
Dennis reached for the pepper and began seasoning his stew.
"I'm just glad that one bitch wasn't there." "Who dat?" "Natalie Bowman. She's the daughter of my victims. She's been there for every one of my hearings except for this one. Guess it helped her sleep better at night," Dennis said contemptuously. "If it were up to her, I would have had the death penalty."
He smirked and shook his head.
"I bet she ain't gonna be happy when she hears the news." "So, where's his house at?"
"Manitou Springs. Last I knew, Mom lived in Fountain, but she must have moved.
I need to see if I still have my brother's number somewhere. He pretty much buried me like everyone else when I got locked up. If I can find it, though, I'm gonna try and call him."
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
As lockdown came, the faint glow of Dennis's clear plastic television lit the inside of his cell. The space, which he had called home for the last 12 years of his stretch, was by design a hollow facsimile, identical to the other 20 or so cells that lined the tier, but he had managed, through his convict ingenuity, to make it as comfortable as possible. His bulletin board provided the decor for his room. While many inmates had pictures of their families pinned on their walls, Dennis had pages torn out of Fine Woodworking magazine. Pictures of tables and chairs, desks and cabinets, along with projects that he had completed over the years. In one of the photos, he's constructing a tiny blue and white caboose for a parade. In another, he's wearing his safety goggles after having just finished a tabletop that would later become the warden's desk. It was a mundane existence by all accounts, but he refused to give up and let his victims win. He was too prideful and stubborn. In his mind, he was doing bad things to bad people, people that somehow deserved their fate. And while many of the prison staff thought of him as harmless and reformed, his good-natured demeanor only acted to mask the shamelessness that still dwelled behind his eyes. He pulled a newspaper clipping from his legal box. The headline read, "Prater found guilty in murder for hire." The article continued, "Dennis Prater was found guilty of first-degree murder on Thursday for his involvement in the deaths of a Manitou Springs couple earlier this year. Prater, 49, dressed in a gray suit, showed little emotion after the verdict was read. He will serve life behind bars for the shooting deaths of Jerry Bowman, 43, and his wife, Annette Bowman, 41. He will be eligible for parole in 10 to 20 years. He tossed the article on his bed and continued digging until he finally came across his address book. He skimmed through the pages until his finger stopped at a faded entry. Richard Prater, 1077 Moffitt Way, Telluride, Colorado. His number was listed below. Dennis dialed the number on the day hall phone, then plugged his ear as he attempted to drown out the noise from the card table. He anxiously awaited for his brother to answer as he pondered his words. After a few rings, however, the call abruptly disconnected. He sighed, then hung up the phone and ambled towards the cell house office. He peeked his head inside and waved at the CO.
"Mr. Carter, how you doing this evening?"
CO Carter looked up from his magazine.
"Oh, hey, Prater. Hey, I heard you got paroled."
Dennis grinned.
"I did. Just, keep it on the down low if you can. Too many knuckleheads around here, if you know what I mean."
"Oh, yeah, and only getting worse. Where are you paroling to?"
"Manitou Springs. My mother left me her house out there."
"Oh, wow, good for you. I go up there sometimes. I got a little under 3 years left, then I'll finally be able to retire from this shithole. Maybe I'll see you around. We can catch up on fishing or something."
Dennis nodded with a sparkle in his eye.
"Well, you deserve it. You folks have a tough job. And I'd take you up on that offer."
His smiling gaze then veered towards the stack of magazines that sat next to Carter's lunchbox.
"Hey, you wouldn't happen to have any of those magazines that I could look at, would you?"
Staff weren't allowed to give or receive anything from inmates, but many made an exception in Dennis's case. Carter set his magazine down, then rifled through his reading material.
"Sure. Let's see. I got Guns and Ammo, People, Newsweek." "Oh, whatever you can spare. Beggars can't be choosers."
"Well, if I had to guess, you look like a Guns and Ammo kind of guy,"
Carter said snarkily.
He tossed the magazine onto the desk in front of Dennis.
I appreciate it, mister, and I won't say anything, Dennis said as he grinned and slipped it under his shirt.
The transfer. As Dennis's parole day fast approached, he met with his attorney as he reviewed the property transfer deed to his mother's house.
So, this is arranged as a land trust,
his attorney whispered to him.
What does that mean?
Dennis replied as he adjusted his glasses.
Well, it looks like your mother put her home in a trust, and that's why you see the bank's name on here and not hers. Families sometimes do that to make it a smoother process and avoid the closing costs that come with a will.
Dennis smiled affectionately.
That was just like Mom. God bless her.
Yeah, she obviously did her homework.
After all the legal jargon, Dennis signed the documents. His case manager then notarized the deed, which completed the transfer and officially recognized him as the home's new owner. On the morning of his release, Dennis visited Tommy one last time as he gave away the last of his property to him. Tommy took possession of his coffee maker, desk lamp, stack of tabloid magazines, and clear plastic fan, items that only acted as a bleak reminder of his wasted existence behind these walls. Dennis gave Tommy his address, and after a cup of coffee, their visit ended with a handshake. Both men knowing full well that this would likely be the last time they would ever speak face to face. But in prison, parting ways with friends was just a part of life. After breakfast, Dennis sat cuffed in intake as he anxiously awaited for the DOC bus to arrive. He had traded his prison greens for a fresh set of khaki dress outs, and a change of wardrobe was his first taste of freedom again. Another inmate, who was also paroling, stepped inside and sat down on the bench across from him. He recognized Dennis and grinned.
You paroling too, OG?
Dennis nodded.
Yep.
You headed to Colorado Springs?
Manitou.
Cool. I can't wait to get home. It's almost like the bitches can smell prison on you,
he chuckled.
Got a lot of catching up to do.
Dennis looked away dismissively. After a long pause, the young man leaned forward in his seat.
So, if you don't mind me asking, is it true about you being a hitman for the mob? 'Cause that shit's dope as fuck.
Dennis curled his lip.
You can't believe half the shit you hear in prison. You want to know the truth?
Yeah.
I was a purse snatcher.
The kid got a puzzled look on his face.
What?
Yeah, I robbed little old ladies in grocery store parking lots.
Wow, yeah, that's not what I heard.
Dennis smirked.
Well, sorry to disappoint you.
But despite his sarcasm, the young man knew the truth. Dennis's name was notorious within the prison due to the high-profile nature of his crime. His first victim, Jerry Bowman, was a prominent businessman and a member of the Manitou Springs City Council. When a former business partner was cut out of his company, the man hired Dennis to kill Jerry and his wife, Annette. They were both executed, and their bodies were set on fire to try and destroy the evidence. It was a heinous act that still haunted their family. And while this wasn't Dennis's first contract killing, it would be the one that landed him behind bars. The release. Dennis was met at the bus station by his friend and former cellmate, Max Darby. Max was a little more than 10 years his junior and had done time for armed robbery and motor vehicle theft. He lived a few miles outside of Manitou and offered to help Dennis as he got back on his feet.
You look like a fish stepping off that bus,
Max joked as Dennis exited the bus and lugged his duffel bag through the parking lot.
I feel like a minnow in a giant pond right about now, Dennis replied as he looked around at the traffic that rushed by on the street.
The two shook hands as Max beamed with a congratulatory grin that seemed almost frozen on his face.
You made it, brother! There ain't too many of us old guys left.
Dennis smiled.
I'm too damn mean to die.
He threw his duffel bag into the back of Max's truck, then hopped inside the cab.
My God, how the city's grown. It's a lot to take in at first, so pace yourself. The world's changed a lot since we first fell. So, where we headed? You hungry?
I thought you'd never ask. Is the old, what the hell was it called? The Hungry Farmer. Is that place still around?
Max shook his head.
No, they went out of business years ago. I got another place you might like, though.
A short time later, they pulled into a small diner on the outskirts of the city. Dennis ordered a full stack of buttermilk pancakes, 4 strips of bacon, and scrambled eggs.
I've been dreaming about this meal since I first heard I was getting out, he said as he began cutting up his food.
It sure beats chow hall food, that's for sure,
Max said as he took a bite of his breakfast burrito.
So, you're going to be staying at your mom's place, huh?
Yeah, she passed away and signed it over to me. I have no idea how long it's been sitting for, so I'm just hoping that it's in decent condition.
Man, you sure lucked out. The place I'm renting is a 1-bedroom, 1-bath. Runs me $1,400 a month, and that's without utilities. That's your biggest hurdle you just got over.
How's it trying to find work out here?
You're a felon, so it's automatically harder. On the bright side, though, there's a bunch of meth heads and bums out here who don't want to work, so I'm sure you will find something.
After their meal, they stopped at Walmart so Dennis could do some shopping for the week. As they passed by electronics, Max stopped and motioned towards the cell phones.
You're gonna need a phone.
Can I just get a landline?
I mean, you can, but I don't know how else to break it to you, pal. But no one's used landlines since about 2010. You want to take a look?
Dennis nodded reluctantly. As they browsed at the phones, a young man with curly dark hair stepped behind the counter.
Afternoon, gentlemen. You looking to buy a phone today?
Dennis nodded.
Yeah, something like that.
Perfect.
The kid pointed at the display case.
Well, we have a deal on the iPhone 17. It's only $10 a month out the door and $5 a month. We also have the newest Samsung Galaxy that we just got in.
Dennis gazed at him as if he were speaking Swahili.
All right, let me back up for a minute. What phone do you have now?
Well, to be honest, I've been using a prison phone for about the last 25 years, and they don't charge much.
Max interjected.
He just wants something simple. Do you guys have flip phones?
As they walked toward the register, Dennis read the back of the box on his new flip phone. He then got in line at the self-checkout and looked around for a cashier.
No, you do it yourself,
Max explained.
What do you mean?
You ring yourself up.
Max grabbed a scanner and began scanning Dennis's items. Dennis watched with a baffled look on his face.
Well, what's to stop someone from stealing?
Max pointed.
They have cameras, but nothing really, I guess.
Hell, everyone else does,
he whispered under his breath. Driving to Dennis's house was a journey that took the men several miles off the main highway. They turned down a series of dirt roads and soon pulled up to a quaint white house with green trim. As Dennis exited Max's truck, the slam of his door seemed to echo endlessly through the forest and caused the birds to scatter from the trees.
Well, you definitely have privacy up here,
Max said as he walked around the truck. Dennis's eyes scanned the property.
No kidding. Look at this place,
he uttered with enchantment. He reached into the back of Max's truck and grabbed his groceries, then climbed the cement steps that led onto the porch. He pulled his key from his pocket and opened the front door as Max followed him into the house, carrying his duffel bag. To Dennis's relief, the furniture was still in place. He walked into the kitchen and set his groceries on the counter, then flipped on the light switch.
Well, I got power,
he said with a beaming smile. Max looked around as he nodded affirmingly.
This is a pretty nice place.
After Dennis put away the groceries, he handed Max a soda, and the two sat down together in the living room.
I still can't believe I'm sitting in my mother's house right now, Dennis said, as he looked up at a cow skull that hung on the wall.
It'll take a while to sink in. Hell, I still wake up sometimes thinking I'm still in prison. All that time behind the walls kind of fucks with you.
Dennis nodded.
You know, it does. I still think about how life was before I got locked up. It almost feels like two different worlds. There's this one memory in particular that sticks with me. I must have been in my late 20s. I was married at the time, had kids. It was the day after Christmas, and I had just set up this new toy train for my son, Michael. And we were playing with it, and he was having a good time and all. And I paused for a minute and remember just marveling at the joy on his face. And I think that was probably the happiest I've ever been.
Dennis then paused thoughtfully as his eyes seemed to reveal a hint of humanity in them.
I really miss those days sometimes.
But then in an instant, the humanity was gone.
But you know what? There ain't no change in the past. Those people died 20-some years ago, and keeping me in prison didn't bring any of them back. It may sound kinda cold, but that's how I look at it. Just a big waste of my time.
Dennis sat up and slapped his knee.
But no more of that. I got a lot of stuff I plan on doing around here.
Max smiled and made a toasting motion with his soda before taking a swig.
Amen to that.
After Max left, Dennis sat his duffel bag in the master bedroom as he began unpacking. He gazed at an old brass bed that was butted up against the wall. Its sheets were neatly straightened, and a colorful crocheted blanket was draped over the edge of it. He thought about his mother lying beneath the covers, resting her head on the same pillow that he would now rest his on. It was sobering and surreal, much like everything had been in the last few weeks. A new beginning.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
The next morning brought with it the promise of a new day. Progress instead of stagnancy. It was still strange to wake up without an overhead announcement, or to defecate without someone standing a few feet away, shaving or brushing their teeth. Dennis fried up some bacon when he heard the slam of a truck door. He figured it was Max, arriving early to get a jump on things, but instead, a man in a checkered lumberjack shirt and vest could be seen walking up the driveway. He climbed the steps onto the porch and knocked on the storm door. Dennis peered at him through the glass.
Can I help you?
A younger, burly-looking man with dark hair and a beard smiled back at him.
Hi, I'm Nolan. I live just down the road and wanted to stop by and introduce myself. I hope I ain't interrupting anything.
Dennis cracked open the door.
No, I was just cooking some breakfast. It's a pleasure to meet you, he said as he shook Dennis's hand. We're kind of a small, tight-knit community up here, so we always try to know who our neighbors are.
Dennis nodded as a smile formed on his face.
Well, thank you. I'm Dennis, by the way. I'm kind of a hermit, so I can appreciate the peace and quiet. Well, me too. When you think about all the craziness that goes on in the city, it makes you that much more grateful to be up here. But hey, if you're cooking breakfast, I don't mean to keep you. Well, I certainly appreciate you stopping by and introducing yourself. Absolutely, Dennis.
And if you ever need anything, me and my wife are just down the way.
You said your name was Nolan?
Yes, sir.
Dennis stuck out his hand. It's good to meet you, Nolan, he said, with a firm handshake. Dennis spent most of the morning rummaging through the house, hoping to find some family photos or something of value. But strangely, there weren't many personal belongings to be found. He began to wonder if some of his relatives had already cleaned out the house and helped themselves to his mother's possessions. Max pulled up to the house after he got off work later in the afternoon. Dennis had just finished shaving when he heard the sound of his truck horn. He quickly patted his face dry and threw on a shirt.
You ready to get your driver's license so you don't have to keep bugging me for rides?
Max said with a playful grin as they drove to the DMV.
The last driving test I had was in, let's see.
Dennis did the math in his head.
About 1965.
Max chuckled.
Holy shit! They had cars back then? Did they give you a handbook or anything to study?
I can drive a car. Christ, it wasn't the Stone Age when I fell.
A little over an hour later, Dennis discovered that he overestimated his ability. He also learned that coasting through a yellow light was an automatic fail. He sat next to Max on the ride home as he shook his head in disappointment.
Man, I could just kick myself. When I looked up, the light had just turned yellow, and I was already almost through the intersection. What was I supposed to do, stop in the middle of traffic?
You'll have to reschedule. Once in a while, you get those assholes.
Stupid cocksucker cost me $100. That's the state for you. Always padding their pockets.
Acceptance seemed to finally set in.
Oh well, hopefully I get it the next time.
Dennis figured he had gone without a license for nearly 30 years, so what was a few more weeks? That evening after dinner, he flipped open his cell phone and tried calling his brother again. The ringtone sounded until he was finally directed to his voicemail.
Richard, this is your brother Dennis. You're probably not going to believe this, but I was just paroled. I know it's been a while, but I'd really like to talk to you.
He glanced down at a piece of paper that he had scribbled his phone number on and read it off.
You're about the only family I have left, so I'd really appreciate it if you could call me.
Since Dennis was stuck at home, he decided to venture outside and explore the property. A small detached garage sat adjacent to the house, a few yards up the driveway. He walked up to it and tried the handle, but discovered that it was locked. He then pulled his keys from his pants pocket and let himself in. The inside was as bare as the main house, with a detectable stench of old motor oil that still lingered in the air. He walked up to some wooden shelves that hung on the wall, then took his hand and wiped off a thick layer of dust. He imagined that with a good cleaning, the area could easily be made into a shop that could be used for his woodworking projects. As he exited the garage, Nolan drove by and stopped in the road.
Hey, neighbor!
He exclaimed.
Hey!
Dennis replied as he began walking in his direction.
I was just checking out the yard.
Nolan pointed out his window.
Hey, just a heads up. You might want to think about removing that pine tree at some point. It makes me a little nervous with the way it's leaning like that.
Dennis turned and looked back at the tree, which appeared dead and slightly teetering towards his house.
The last thing you want is a tree crashing through your window.
You're probably right,
Dennis said as he squinted in the sun.
If you ain't busy today, I could give you a hand.
Well, I appreciate that, but I don't have any tools on me.
I got a chainsaw. Wouldn't take but a few hours.
Dennis thought about it for a minute and began nodding.
Yeah, I'd take you up on that. Do you have any extra gloves?
Actually, I think I do.
Nolan glanced at his watch.
After I drop my boy off at school, I'll load up my chainsaw and be back to give you a hand.
And with a nod, he drove off. as Dennis could be seen waving at him in his rearview mirror. A little over a half hour later, Nolan returned with a gas chainsaw loaded in the back of his truck. Dennis stepped out of his house and walked down the driveway.
"What can I help you with?"
"Well, it depends. Where are you going to want the wood?"
Dennis remembered seeing some logs stacked up in the backyard.
"Around back, there's a pile of logs on the patio we can throw it on."
As the men went to work cutting down the tree, conversation naturally ensued.
"So, where are you from?"
"Well, I'm originally from Fountain."
Dennis's voice lowered some.
"I've been kind of down on my luck for a while, so I'm finally just getting back on my feet."
"I can relate. I was in a pretty bad place before I met my wife, and she helped me turn my life around. But it seems like fate put us both here for a reason. You believe in that type of thing?"
"You know, I always have. And with the way things been working out here lately, it only reinforces that belief."
Dennis paused.
"Did you happen to know the woman that used to live in this house?"
Nolan grinned thoughtfully as he wiped the sweat from his brow.
"I sure did. Seemed like a sweet lady. I think she ended up passing away some time ago."
"She was my mother."
"No kidding,"
Nolan said as he sat his chainsaw down.
"Yeah. When she passed away, she left this place to me, so I'm here now."
"Well, that's good at staying in the family. Too many times you end up seeing homes get sold and the new owners just let the place go to hell."
He reached for his drink.
"It's a damn shame when that happens."
After they finished stacking the last of the logs in the backyard, Dennis stood back with his arms crossed as he gazed at the pile of wood.
"Look at all that wood. Maybe I'll make something out of it."
"You like to build things?"
"I've been a woodworker for almost 20 years now. I've built tables, chairs, mainly furniture. But I also make stuff like model houses and toy cars."
Nolan's eyes widened with intrigue.
"Really?"
"Oh, yeah."
Dennis motioned towards the house.
"You want to see a few things?"
"Sure. If you don't mind me coming in covered in sawdust."
"Oh, shit, sawdust don't bother me. Come on."
He laughed as he gestured at Nolan to follow him inside. As they stepped into the spare bedroom, Dennis began displaying several of his creations. He showcased his airplane, toy car, and butterfly sculpture. Finally, he pointed at his model cabin that sat on the floor next to the closet.
"This cabin was one of the first models I ever built. It's a 1/10 scale replica of an actual house."
Nolan bent down to get a closer look.
"Wow! Does the door open?"
"Oh yeah, it opens."
Nolan opened the tiny door, then closed it. He smiled, and his face lit up with amusement as he stood back up.
"I can't imagine the effort that went into making all these things."
He then paused and turned to Dennis as his smile somewhat faded.
"You should have built a coffin."
"A coffin?"
Dennis repeated, as the remark caught him somewhat off guard. Nolan chuckled nervously as if almost embarrassed.
"I don't know why I said coffin. I guess the hinges on the cabin door reminded me of one or something."
Dennis laughed.
"Well, I've never built a coffin before, but I've done plenty of cabinet doors that have hinges on them."
"You say you do cabinetry?"
"I've done it all, except for coffins,"
Dennis replied lightheartedly.
"Well, now I know who to go to when we update our kitchen,"
Nolan said, as he grinned and gently slapped Dennis on the back.
"Oh yeah, this old man can still work."
As the week drew to an end, Nolan provided a helping hand on several more occasions. He gave Dennis a ride to the grocery store and helped him with some plumbing issues, which in turn took some of the burden off Max, who worked a 60-hour week. Dennis tried to offer Nolan money, but he would never accept payment, nor had he ever asked for any favors in return. His generosity was admirable, even somewhat perplexing to Dennis, who was still ingrained with a convict mentality, because in prison, everything eventually came at a cost. Twist of Fate. One evening, just as Dennis was about to doze off on the sofa, his phone rang, jolting him awake. He answered, and his brother's voice came over the other end.
Hi, Dennis. This is Richard. I got your message.
Well, hey, Richard. Thanks for calling me back. There was a distance in Richard's tone.
No problem. It's been a while.
I know it has. It's been too long.
I didn't know if I'd ever live to see this day.
Dennis laughed nervously. I honestly didn't either.
So where are you staying at?
Well, I'm at Mom's house up here in Manitou. I'm sure you've probably heard that she left her place to me. That's when I first heard that she passed away, God rest her soul. There was a moment of deafening silence on Richard's end.
You're at Mom's house?
Yeah.
Dennis, Mom passed away close to 15 years ago. We sold her house in Fountain right after she died.
Dennis froze in consternation. Well, that's impossible. I mean, I signed the deed myself a few weeks ago.
Who told you it was her house? Was her name on the paperwork?
Both my case manager and attorney. It was arranged in a trust, though, so I think the bank's name was on there if I remember right. The men continued making small talk and offering updates on each other's lives, but the confusion over whose house Dennis was living in largely overshadowed much of their conversation. I'll try sorting this out tomorrow because something ain't adding up. Maybe I'll try calling the assessor's office and see what they tell me.
Well, yeah, let me know what you find out.
After their conversation ended, Dennis hung up with a disturbed look on his face and far more questions than answers. In the back of his mind, he did think it was somewhat strange for someone like his mother, who was never the outdoor type, to be living alone deep within the woods. The next morning, Dennis called the courthouse and spoke with the county assessor. They explained that because the property was arranged in a land trust, the original owner, or grantor, was private. He could try and request the information, but it was a lengthy process that could take weeks or even months to complete.
This is probably gonna sound kinda weird, but I don't know for sure whose house I'm living in,
Dennis said to Max as they sat together visiting later that afternoon.
What do you mean? I thought it was your mom's place.
I did too. Until I spoke with my brother yesterday. He said they sold her house in Fountain like 15 years ago after she passed away. And come to think of it, I don't remember seeing her name anywhere on the deed.
Well, you should be able to search online. Property is a public record.
I think normally they are, but in this case it's a land trust, which is different. I called the assessor's office and requested the information, but they said it could take up to a few months.
Max chuckled.
Well, shit, that's a great problem to have. I wish I could have a house fall into my lap like that. It's gotta be just a mix-up or something.
Dennis's brow furrowed as he recollected.
I remember Nolan, the guy that lives down the way, telling me that there was a lady that used to live here that passed away recently.
He sighed and shook his head.
I mean, Christ. I don't know what to believe at this point.
Hold on,
Max said as he pulled his phone out of his pocket.
What was your mom's name?
Nancy Prater.
Max searched Nancy Prater Manitou Springs, but no matching result came back.
Nothing out here. You said she used to live in Fountain?
Yeah.
Max searched again, only this time he changed the city to Fountain. The first result appeared to be a match.
Well, here's a Nancy Dolores Prater. Is that her?
He said as he handed Dennis his phone. Dennis gazed down at the screen.
That's her, he said as he nodded. How do I read the article?
Just tap on it with your finger,
Max instructed. Dennis tapped on the article, which was a link to his mother's obituary. He began reading it. Nancy Dolores Prater, February 18, 1927, April 14, 2011. Nancy Dolores Prater, age 84, passed away peacefully at her residence in Fountain, Colorado on April 14, 2011. The article went on to mention Dennis as her son and included a brief summary of her life. Dennis lowered the phone as the color drained from his face.
Retribution.
The roar of an engine could be heard off in the distance. Dennis paused from sweeping out the garage and looked out the door as Nolan turned into his driveway. He quickly rested his broom against the wall, then scampered towards him.
The Farmer's Almanac's calling for an Indian summer, and with the aspen already changing, I believe it.
Oh yeah? How bad are the fires up here?
We've been lucky as of late. The last one I can recall was the Waldo Canyon fire, but that was before I ever got here.
Dennis nodded, and an anxious look soon overtook his face.
Hey, Nolan, how well did you know the woman that used to live here? Did you happen to know her name?
Nolan frowned.
Well, I thought you said she was your mother.
Well, I did, but I got a call a few days ago that made me question some things. My mom's name was Nancy.
Nolan snapped his fingers.
That's it. It was Nancy. That jogged my memory when you said her name. I didn't know her all that well. She kind of kept to herself. Waved sometimes when I'd drive by.
About how long ago did she pass away?
Nolan began slowly shaking his head as he appeared to contemplate the question.
Maybe like 6 months ago? Like I said, she seemed like a sweet lady, just kind of a recluse.
Dennis nodded vacantly.
Okay.
Well, I hope you get it figured out, whatever's going on. I came by to invite you over for dinner tonight if you ain't busy. I've been telling the wife all about you.
Tonight?
Yeah, she's cooking elk meat stew, and she always ends up making way too much.
What time?
6 o'clock sound good?
Dennis cracked a smile and nodded.
Yeah. Yeah, 6 o'clock should work.
Nolan grinned widely.
I'll pick you up then. You better be hungry.
Evening soon rolled in, and twilight took form as the sun settled below the crest of the Rocky Mountains. Dennis saw Nolan's headlights shine through the blinds as he pulled into his driveway. He turned off the TV, then threw on his jacket and brown fedora.
Shit, Dennis, you're a hell of a dresser,
Nolan said as Dennis hopped into the passenger side of his truck.
Well, it's not like I have anything else to get dressed up for,
Dennis replied as he reached to shake his hand. After traveling down the road for several miles, they finally pulled up to a locked metal farm gate that had a giant longhorn skull attached to the center of it. Nolan got out of his truck, then walked up to the gate and undid the padlock. He swung it open, then got back into his truck and crept through the entrance. He drove a few hundred feet up to a log cabin house that was partially hidden by a dense grove of pine trees. A light from inside the house could be seen gently peeking out from behind the curtains. Adjacent to the house, there was a large detached garage that was also lit up.
Man, this place is really tucked away,
Dennis said as he peered out the window. Nolan parked in front of the house, then turned to Dennis with a welcoming grin.
Well, you ready to meet the family?
Yeah, I'm starting to get a little hungry now too, Dennis said as he rubbed his stomach. Elk stew sounded mighty good right about now.
Dennis followed Nolan with a carefree stride as they both made their way toward the house. After they entered, he stopped just inside the doorway.
Just have a seat in the living room and I'll get my wife,
Nolan said as he took off down the hall. Dennis nodded graciously, then strolled into the living room and took a seat on the sofa in front of a muted TV. Garth Brooks' The Thunder Rolls could be heard playing quietly on the stereo. He leaned back, then stretched his arms out on the cushions as he made himself comfortable. A few moments later, Nolan walked back into the room.
My wife will be just a minute. Oh, hey, one more thing.
Dennis looked up from the TV. Nolan's smile and expression suddenly vanished, and the warmth in his voice turned ice cold.
Take off that stupid fucking hat.
Dennis sat up and smiled awkwardly.
Excuse me?
He said, thinking that he may have misunderstood him. Nolan took a few steps closer, then raised his arm in the air, which exposed a crowbar that he had hidden behind his leg. He swung it forcefully and struck Dennis in the face. Dennis fell onto the cushion next to him. He began groaning and grabbed his jaw, which appeared to be broken. His hat toppled off his head as he slowly raised himself back up in his seat. He turned to Nolan wide-eyed and panicked as blood ran from his mouth.
What the fuck is going on?
Nolan threw down the crowbar, then reached into his shirt pocket and pulled out a set of handcuffs.
What are you doing?
Dennis said as his eyes locked onto the cuffs. Nolan grabbed him by the wrist, then proceeded to handcuff him as Dennis tried pulling away.
You still remember what those double strands felt like slapping across your wrist?
The louder Nolan got, the more evident his southern drawl became.
You know, I think we may have gotten off on the wrong foot, because neither one of us has been completely honest about our past. But it seems to me we have a lot more in common than you know.
Dennis grimaced as he looked up at Nolan in his seat.
What the hell are you talking about?
He cried out as he fidgeted in his cuffs. Nolan pulled out a folded-up sheet of paper from his back pocket and opened it up. It was his inmate profile from the Georgia State Penitentiary.
Look at that handsome devil,
he said as he gazed at his mugshot photo. He handed it to Dennis.
This was back when I was inmate 22714, property of the state of Georgia. Served 9 years for menacing an assault with a deadly weapon. Guess you could say I have some anger issues.
Dennis handed him back the paper.
Why are you showing me this? And why the hell am I cuffed up?
At that moment, Dustin Bowman, the son of the couple that Dennis had murdered and served his 26-year sentence for, stepped into the room. He gripped a revolver in his hand, and his eyes burned with vengeance. Behind him, his sister Natalie emerged. Dennis snapped his head towards them, and his mouth slowly gaped open in shock. He looked back at Nolan in complete disbelief. Nolan pulled a pistol from the back of his waistband.
Say hello to the family,
he said as he motioned in their direction.
That's my brother-in-law, Dustin, and my wife, Natalie. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you two already know each other.
Dennis couldn't speak. When he tried to mouth words, his lips quivered and froze. Although he had never laid eyes on Dustin, he knew Natalie all too well. She had been to every one of his parole hearings and even petitioned to get his sentence upgraded to death. In the process, she learned as much as she could about him, to the point where inquiry bordered on obsession. She clung to the hope that if she could somehow try and understand the monster that he was, maybe she could achieve some level of closure. But closure never came, and as the years passed, her and Dustin eventually grew disillusioned with the justice system, which they believed had failed their parents. With Dennis now facing the possibility of parole every year, they decided that the only way to get the kind of justice that they desired was to take the law into their own hands. To accomplish this, they knew that somehow they would need to access him. They would then have to isolate him, gain his trust, and then carry out the punishment that they believed was rightfully justified and long overdue. As a last resort, Dustin decided to transfer his home into Dennis's name. He arranged it in a land trust so that he would remain anonymous, while at the same time still in control of the property. He then called the Colorado Board of Parole, pretending to be an attorney, and informed them that Dennis's mother had passed away and left him as the home's beneficiary. It was a desperate act, but they figured it could work, being as Dennis was long estranged from his family. Once he had housing, the last condition of his parole plan had been met, and he would be released exactly where they wanted him, alone and in an unfamiliar place.
"I've been waiting to see your face,"
Dustin said with a voice that cut like a razor.
"I wasn't going to let you get off that easy for what you did, for what you took from us."
He motioned at Dennis with his gun.
"Now I want you to look at my sister."
Dennis's eyes remained fixated on Dustin, and his body was paralyzed with fear.
"Look at her!"
Dustin shouted as he stepped next to him and placed the barrel of his gun up to his temple. He then grabbed him by the back of his neck and turned his head toward Natalie.
"I want her to see the fear in your eyes. I want her to see every moment of suffering that you endure before you're put down like an animal. And that's what you are, an animal."
He then leaned down, close to Dennis's ear.
"But you know what? I'm more of an animal."
He began to snicker sadistically.
"See, when you signed that deed, you signed your own death warrant. You didn't parole. You just transferred facilities. Because this right here, this is death row, motherfucker."
"I'm sorry. What do you want from me?"
Dennis exclaimed as he choked on his words.
"You're sorry doesn't mean shit to me.
I'm a different person now. Please, you gotta believe me."
"Get up,"
Dustin said as he motioned with his gun.
"Look, it doesn't have to go like this. I really am sorry. If there was some way I could change things..."
Dustin pistol whipped Dennis in the face, knocking him back in his seat and breaking his glasses.
"I still don't think you understand how this works. This is non-negotiable. Now get the fuck up."
"If you're gonna shoot me, just get it over with."
Dennis's frightened voice cracked. Dustin looked over at Nolan and motioned with his head.
"It's time."
Nolan placed his gun back in his waistband, then walked over to Dennis and jerked him out of his seat.
"No, don't do this! Please!"
Dennis howled as Nolan dragged him out of the living room.
"Dead man walking!"
Nolan shouted as he flung open the front door and forced Dennis outside. As they rounded the back of the house, the high-pitched wail of penned-up barking dogs startled Dennis, who staggered through the darkness. They made their way towards the detached garage and stopped in front of the door. Dustin punched in the security code on the keypad, and the garage door began inching its way up its track. When the inside finally came into view, there was an object that immediately caught Dennis's attention. In the corner of the garage, amongst all the tools and power equipment, sat a sturdy wooden chair. It was bolted to the floor and fitted with nylon straps and a metal skull cap that was attached to the backrest. Its design made it both ominous as well as unmistakable. It was a makeshift electric chair that the men had built together using their knowledge of thermodynamics. A chill ran down Dennis's spine as he struggled to grasp what he was observing. He dropped to his knees and cried out for mercy.
"No, no, please don't do this. I'm sorry for what I've done. If I could somehow bring your parents back, I would."
"Shut the fuck up,"
Dustin snarled as he holstered his gun.
"You're sorry you got caught. That's what you're sorry for. See, now we can finally cut through all the bullshit. And there ain't no lawyer or appeal that can save you now."
"Oh, my God. Oh, my God."
"Well, I'm glad you finally found Jesus, because you're going to answer to him next.
Now get the fuck up!
Dustin barked as he bent over and slugged Dennis in the gut. Nolan pulled Dennis back to his feet, and the two men dragged him the rest of the way, then dumped him in the chair. Nolan held him down by his throat as Dustin went to work securing the straps around his body. Once they were in place, he walked over to a nearby shelf and grabbed a set of clippers. He then steadied Dennis's head and began shaving off his hair. After his scalp was exposed, he wiped off the excess clippings, then placed a metal skull cap on his head and fastened the chin strap. When Nolan finally released his grip, Dennis began coughing.
Please! Please don't!
He pleaded, in between gasping for air. Dustin unrolled a strip of duct tape and placed it over his mouth. He then turned towards Nolan and Natalie.
Okay, now the condemned has been prepped and restrained, we can begin.
He motioned towards Nolan.
Start hooking up the cables.
Nolan walked over to Natalie's car, which was backed up into the garage, and popped open the trunk. Inside was a set of rolled-up jumper cables. He began unrolling the cables as Dustin turned back to Dennis, who watched in horror, his muffled cries reverberating throughout the inside.
Dennis Prater, I sentence you to death by way of electrocution for taking the lives of Jerry and Annette Bowman.
As Dustin kept speaking, Nolan pried open the compartment that led to the car's hybrid battery. He then attached the jumper cables to its terminals.
You so senselessly robbed two beautiful souls of the life they had left. You stripped us of a mother and father, and our children of their grandparents. The pain you caused our family was immeasurable.
He then turned toward Natalie.
Go ahead.
Natalie uncrossed her arms and stepped forward. She sniveled with tears in her eyes.
You know I used to try and understand you. I wanted to understand how a person could be so cruel and inhuman. But then I finally realized there's no comprehending what you did. You will never know the damage you caused. You didn't give a fuck, so neither do I. So fuck you!
Natalie exclaimed as she flipped off Dennis and spit on him.
Okay. Well then, if no one has anything else to add, we can continue with the execution. Dennis Prater, at this time, 400 volts of electricity will pass through your body, scrambling your brain and stopping your heart. This execution will begin at 6:40 p.m. and will continue until we are sure, goddamn sure, that you are no longer breathing. Afterwards, your body will be burned in much the same way that our parents were.
The clock on the wall displayed 6:39 p.m.
Did you have any final words?
Dennis's muffled screams increased in intensity as he jerked around in his seat.
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that. Did you, Nolan?
Dustin replied sarcastically as he looked over at Nolan, who shook his head. The clock then struck 6:40 p.m., triggering the moment of reckoning.
All right. Start the car.
Nolan got into the car and started the engine. Dustin walked over to the car and removed the jumper cables from its trunk. He then lurched in Dennis's direction, taunting him by tapping their ends together, which caused them to spark. He stepped behind him, then locked eyes with Natalie. After a deep breath, he connected the clamps to the power terminals on the chair. There was a powerful clack as Dennis took the full force of 400 volts to the body. Nolan revved the engine, causing the car's dash to flicker as every last bit of electrical current was sent surging through Dennis's brain. Sparks sprayed from under his skull cap, and he groaned as his body spasmed uncontrollably. His fingernails dug into the wooden armrests, and blood began to trickle down the corner of his mouth. Natalie had to turn away. Dustin just watched, stony-eyed and seemingly numb to what he was witnessing. As the horror show continued, Dennis's eyeballs burst in their sockets, and smoke began billowing from his ears. Dustin finally reached down and disconnected the clamps as he choked on the fumes. Nolan then turned off the car and exited the vehicle. There was an eerie stillness as Dennis was left slumped over and smoldering in his seat. The sickening stench of his burnt flesh hung thick in the air. Dustin stepped in front of him and pulled out his gun. He poked him in the chest with the barrel, but Dennis didn't move. He then reached to check for a pulse, unaware that his skin was searing hot.
"Ah!"
Dustin exclaimed as he jerked his hand away. He turned toward Nolan.
"I don't know about you, but I think that boy's definitely well done."
After Dennis's body finally cooled to the touch, Dustin undid his chin strap, then proceeded to remove the skull cap from his head. Nolan watched with morbid curiosity as Dustin slowly peeled it off. The top of Dennis's head was completely evaporated, leaving his skull bone exposed in a circle shape. The skin around it had melted and ran down his head like hot wax. Dustin looked up at Nolan and smiled darkly.
"You know what they always say. If you want a job done right, sometimes you gotta do it yourself."
Nolan nodded.
"You're right about that."
Natalie came up from behind, covering her mouth.
"Is he dead?"
"Well, if he ain't dead yet, he will be."
He then turned to Nolan.
"Let's wrap him up and get him out of here."
Nolan grabbed a blanket that the men had planned to wrap Dennis in. They placed it on the ground in front of the chair, then Dustin went to work undoing the straps around his body. As Dennis fell forward, Nolan guided him out of the seat and onto the blanket. He laid there motionless, although they couldn't tell for sure if he was dead or just unconscious. After wrapping him in the blanket, they loaded his body into the back of Nolan's truck. Dustin then grabbed a gas can and they sped out of the driveway. They drove down a narrow back road as they ventured further onto the property. After finally coming upon a clearing, Nolan pulled over and parked. Dustin got out and dropped the tailgate. Then both men pulled Dennis's body from the bed of the truck. They hauled him through the woods as Natalie followed closely behind, carrying the gas can. She gazed up at the night sky, wondering if her parents were watching over them. They soon came upon a shallow grave and tossed Dennis's body into the hole. Dustin took the gas can and began pouring its contents into the opening. He then glanced over at Natalie as he pulled a box of matches from his pocket and handed them to her. As she reached for a match, a Bible verse repeated in her mind, "For nothing is hidden that will not be revealed, nor anything secret that will not be made known and come to light." She struck the match, then tossed it in the hole. Dustin put his arm around her as they watched a sea of flames begin devouring Dennis's body. They had both vowed to bring their parents' killer to justice, and tonight, justice had finally come to pass.
"He's in hell now,"
Dennis said as he clutched his sister.
"Remember this night, judgment night."
And that was Judgment Night by author Brian Asbury. A good reminder that everyone deserves a second chance. Of course, that doesn't always mean you're going to get one. Hey, a little bit about that wild man. Old Brian Asbury is originally from Pueblo, Colorado. He's a big fan of television shows like Tales from the Crypt and Twilight Zone, and gritty 90s psychological thrillers like Cape Fear and Unlawful Entry. He's a regular contributor, and if you've enjoyed this story, you can check out many of his other ones available on the channel.
His collection, Waking the Dead, and numerous other short stories are available on Amazon. Just type in Brian Asbury and you'll see them all, including Greetings from Asbury Park by Bruce Springsteen. Now, ignore Bruce Springsteen, because he sucks, and pick up some books from a real artist, Brian Asbury. Fans can connect with him on Facebook under Brian Asbury-Writer. He'd like to thank his lovely wife, Amber, who has been one of his biggest inspirations, and also his family and friends. You know who you are. And be sure to check out his fancy website at brianasbury.com.
Oye, Brian, mucho gracias, amigo.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I guess this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend. And if you miss me out there, don't forget about patreon.com/drewblood. You can hear hours and hours of me, Paul J. McSorley, and Jeff Sturtevant busting each other's balls. It's a pretty good time. Meanwhile, may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. And until we meet again, y'all, go fuck yourselves. Good night, y'all.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.